Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, Dane is joined by Sejal Thacker. Sejal is the Chief Civility Officer at Train Extra. She founded Train Extra to empower teams to create civil, safe, positive, and inclusive workplaces. She's also the Chief Culture Officer at Nobody Studios, has given 2 TEDx talks, and is a keynote speaker. Tune in to discover, first, that you can lead the charge in creating a civil workplace. Incivility is a growing issue, but by modeling civility and setting clear expectations, you can drive positive change at any level. Don't wait for leaders. Start fostering a respectful culture today. Second, transform conflict with the power of calling in. Instead of calling people out, call them in to address issues like microaggressions in a supportive way. This approach builds understanding, growth, and a safer team environment. Finally, align your team with a clear vision and shared expectations. Clarity and alignment are key to reducing workplace incivility. Set clear expectations and make civility a visible value to keep your team connected and productive. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by Sejal Thacker. Sejal is the Chief Civility Officer at Train Extra. She's also the Chief Culture Officer at Nobody Studios. Has a couple of TEDx talks to her name, keynote speaker, and this whole concept of civility and incivility is really fascinating for me. So I'm excited to dive into the conversation. Welcome, Sejal.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
You bet. So we had a good chat before the show, but for the benefit of our listeners, could you provide a little bit more of a backstory on how you came to land on this whole movement of civility and the great work that you're doing?
Thank you. Yeah, no, I for the first decade of my career, I was a defense attorney. So I was actually working and representing leaders, working a lot with HR, representing organizations and all kinds of employment law cases. But I ended up focusing in and specializing in cases that involved harassment, discrimination, retaliation. And so as I was doing this work, I saw firsthand, you know, what happens when civility goes out the window, right? And it wasn't pretty. And I was coming in after the fact, you know, cleaning up the mess of all everything that had happened. And what I started seeing was, and started feeling frustrated with, sort of wanting to work with organizations proactively so that we can create better cultures, better workplaces, better environments, so we can keep those darn lawyers away, right? So that became my tagline of like, let's do this right. And let's not end up in court, because nobody wins. Once the case ends up in court, there's no winners, right? And so, So I after my son was born 12 years ago, I decided, you know what? I don't want to litigate anymore. I actually want to work with organizations proactively. So I started my own company called Train Extra that you talked about, where I offer customized workshops, all really geared at helping organizations achieve civility in their workplaces.
Awesome. And as we were talking before the show, I think you were saying some of your mentors were like, you sure you don't want to pick a different word like respect? And tell me a little bit more about civility, you know, the stats. You've got some really good content there on LinkedIn that I was seeing this morning.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, when I started thinking about, and I literally did this where I pulled out all the cases that I'd worked on. And I started taking a look at what was going on in these cases and what could we have done differently to mitigate the risk, right, of these cases ending up in court. And it all boiled down to communication. You know, it's like there were situations where either people didn't see eye to eye on something, you know, or there was an incident that happened and maybe one person took the comment to be offensive and the other person was joking, for example. You know, and I was kind of going through these cases and I kept seeing the same pattern over and over again, is that people didn't know how to get around those situations when they were dealing with incivility, right? And when I say incivility, what I'm talking about is there's a whole range of behaviors that happen at work, right? Or in the world in general, where, you know, if we focus in on the workplace, right, where these behaviors are not necessarily illegal behaviors. Mm-hmm. So they're not your harassment, discrimination, but they might be a rude comment, an offensive comment, a microaggression that yep. happens pretty frequently inside of an organization. And we weren't equipping these folks with how to deal with those situations, right?
Yes. And
then especially since, you know, as you and I were talking about these last few years, incivility has skyrocketed even more since I started my company, you know? Yeah. And so really it's helping people understand what we mean by civility, right? And what is, because that's the reason why I picked that word, going back to what you were saying about my mentor,
yeah.
is that, you know, she was saying, well, aren't you just saying that we want workplaces to be respectful, right? Isn't that what you mean by civility? And I said, no, that's not what, you know, it's more than that. Respect is a component of civility, right? But there's yep. more that goes into civility. And you and I can talk about that as we get into the conversation. But yeah, that's kind of how I kind of viewed it. And I think it was the best thing that I mean, when I look back on which track I could have taken, because I could have done this work in a lot of different areas. I yep. absolutely am so glad I chose this route. And I don't know if you heard, I'm sure you did, because you work a lot with HR leaders. But the Society of Human Resource Management, SHRM, just mm-hmm. this year, earlier this year, I think it was in April or March or April, where they launched their initiative called 100 million, let's have 100 million civil conversations. So now yes. SHRM is now backing the what I call civility revolution, right?
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And we talk a lot about the breakdown in human connection, whether it's in our teams at work or even in our communities. And I'm assuming that that's somewhat tied to this escalating, skyrocketing incivility that we're seeing.
Yeah.
So it seems like it's basic connective tissue that we've not paid attention to in recent times.
Absolutely, 100%. I couldn't have said that better. It really is, and that's what I'm saying is like it was a you know there was a, how to have effective communication. Right. With somebody, especially after the pandemic where everyone's feeling disconnected already. Right. Yeah. And then how do you connect with somebody when you're working with them virtually? You know, for example, mm-hmm. at Nobody Studios, where I'm the chief culture officer there. And it's been challenging to really help craft their culture strategies when a lot of the people that are working together have never even connected in person. So their only connection yep. is in the remote world, right? So basic, just how to have effective communications just in general, but also during those difficult situations, right? Where you don't see eye to eye. So the other thing was people, you know, the leaders that I was dealing with and just people in general. So everything that I talk about in civility, it really applies to everybody. It's not just for the leaders, right? It's yeah. for every single person in the organization needs to know this stuff. But like how to have a healthy dialogue, for example, right? Like
yeah.
there is a deficiency. I mean, it's every HR person I talk to, every, you know, in the ability to have productive discourse, right? And have a constructive yes. disagreement. That if people don't know how to do that, then that could lead to incivility, right? That creates silos. People feel like, oh, you're not on my team or you don't have my back. And so that, you know, effective communication separately, then the second thing was the healthy dialogues. Like, how do we have healthy dialogues? Because no matter which organization you're in, there's always going to be a situation where people don't see eye to eye because we all view yeah. life differently. We have different experiences. And then I saw in some of those cases that I was looking at, you know, what led to a lot of the uncivil behaviors I was seeing was there appeared to be like this like loss of shared vision, you
yes.
know, where people kind of had that sense of isolation or they perceive that they're all alone in what they're dealing with, you know, rather than feeling like I'm part of something bigger than myself. And then that was leading to a lot of uncivil behaviors. And again, just to clarify, when I say uncivil, I'm talking about a whole range of behaviors that includes microaggressions, right? Because microaggressions, yeah. again, that was one that kept coming up over and over again when I was looking at all the cases I worked on, where if I traced it back to the initial behavior or initial comment in a vacuum,
yeah.
I'm like, did this person really intentionally mean to harass this person, or do they just have some sort of unconscious bias that's causing them to make this comment or react in this way? And so, and microaggressions happen all the time. They happen frequently.
Yes.
And they happen casually. And so I just felt like there was a lot of gaps where organizations were missing the mark on how to properly prepare their teams and their people to deal with these situations, right? So,
yeah, definitely. I'd like to jump in a little bit more, Sejal, on microaggressions, because I've come across them and seen them in some of the literature. But for the benefit of listeners, like, what would be some practical examples of how microaggressions start to snowball into bigger problems around incivility in the workplace?
Great question. So I'm going to take you one step back. So
sure.
Micro, because the word microaggressions, a lot of people don't know really what that means, and it's misused all the time. But it's important to understand, and this was what my first TEDx talk was about, right? Was the idea of unconscious bias, which is normal. If you have brain, you have bias, right? That's just, it's how our brain operates. And so when you have these unconscious biases, which again, we all do, right? What ends up happening is that you, all of these behavior, these, you know, perceptions, these beliefs, this information is coming at you, and you're making automatic assumptions about somebody based on what you see. And based on what you've experienced in your own life, right? And so microaggressions are behaviors that are not intentional, right? So it's not that I am aware that I have a bias against this person, and now I'm saying something about them, right? So, so for example, I have a bias against, let's say, older people, right? So I have age bias. And so it's conscious bias when I know about that, and then I'm driving and I see an old person driving next to me, and I go, all these old people, they just take forever, right? Now that's intentionally being biased, right, towards that person. But let's say I have an age bias, but I'm not aware that I have that bias, right? And so I'm not aware of that bias, and now maybe I'm working with somebody at work, and they're older than me, and so I don't want to work on this project with them, right? Mm-hmm. And so I might unintentionally let that person feel like I don't want to work with them, right? And I don't know why that's happening, but that person is on the receiving end. They're feeling that behavior, right? They're dealing with those comments that I might make without even knowing it. So these microaggressions, what they are they are behaviors, they're things we might say, even the way we use our voice, our tone of voice, whether we make eye contact with their behaviors, their subtle behaviors that are a result of this implicit bias, this unconscious bias that we have. Again, that's totally normal based on what we've gone through in our lives. So unless we're aware of the bias, we continue to engage in these behaviors. And so a lot of these cases, I was looking at them and I'm like, man, if somebody would have just called this person in, that's what I say, is call them in and say, hey, this may not have been your intention, but here's how I saw this, or here's the behavior, right?
Yes.
And so it's not about trying to make that person feel bad, or because they're not doing it intentionally, you know? And so
there's no judgment. It's just a straight up, hey, I observed this and
exactly.
I want you to give it
That's
some
exactly
thought.
What it is. You're just stating your observations. You're not trying to make them feel bad, and because they're not aware that they're doing that, right? But the people around that person sees what they're doing. They see what they're saying, what they're not saying, and they can pick up on it. And so I always, when I'm working with teams, I always say, hey, when you're being called in, think of it like it's a gift. That person's letting you know that, hey, you may not be aware of it, and there's nothing wrong with that, but this behavior could be perceived in this biased way, right, by this person. And so ultimately, the point I want to make sure that gets hammered home is that whether or not the behavior is intentional or not, so in a microaggression, it's not intentional, but in a conscious bias situation, it is intentional. The point is that the impact that it has on that person is the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And so I think it's important. And as I do my civility work, and part of that is sharing a framework with people about when you see these kinds of behaviors that are like microaggressions, how do you call somebody in? You know, what do you say?
Yes.
How do you do that? And it seems so basic, right?
Yeah.
But it is. But it's so important because people just don't know, you know, how to intervene or how to say something without you know, it impacting their relationship or feeling like you're, you know, you're trying to punish them or you're trying to single them out when all you're trying to do is help them, right? So I think it's important to frame it as it's a gift, right?
Yeah. And I love the feedback as a gift piece, but I'm also hearing, Sejal, that this call them in versus call them out, is that an intentional choice of language?
Yes, absolutely. Because, you know, I mean, this whole like cancel culture, you know, somebody says something wrong and now they're not ever going to get a job again because they've been blasted on social media. I don't think that that's the right way of changing culture. You know, I don't think that just creates like, you know, when you think about some of the worst cultures that are out there that you hear about, right? That whole fearful environment where we're going to let fear and anxiety, you know, and cause anxiety to people. And all that does is it creates an environment where now people don't want to speak up. Yes. Right. And this becomes a huge problem for companies. I mean, I always say, like, If you haven't heard about anything or if your employees are not saying something, that's a red flag because you want an environment, you want to create an environment where people are coming to you more frequently, more often, they're more comfortable with sharing their concerns or ideas or whatever they're observing. We don't want that kind of fearful environment. We want the opposite. We want to create safety, right? So people feel comfortable to voice these things because, I mean, think about it. If you're HR, wouldn't you rather know about it so that you can do something about it to prevent the harm from continuing or escalating or ending up on social media, God forbid? Like just spend an hour on LinkedIn. You see, people are not afraid to share what they're dealing with in the workplace anymore. You know, it's making social media. So I think that old school mentality of what happens within the four walls is never going to leave the four walls. Like that's old.
It's gone.
That's totally gone.
No, you're absolutely right. You mentioned the framework that you'll work on with teams. So is it just HR or just the leader that's calling these people in or is it more of a inclusive, like any team member can call anyone else in for a conversation about an observed behavior?
Yeah, no, it's everybody and anybody, right? Top to bottom, everybody's a part of the solution. And that's really where I think the huge shift needs to be. We can't just place the responsibility or accountability on just the leadership. Of course, I'm not denying that oftentimes that's where it starts and then it starts to become the norm for the organization. If the leadership is role modeling, you know, bad behaviors, then of course we want to deal with that. But I really think it's everybody's collective responsibility, right? And so part of the plan or the framework that I've sort of created that I encourage organizations to think about embracing or modifying in whatever way makes sense is making sure that you make it clear to everybody, especially as you're getting the buy-in to the leadership team or the important stakeholders, that the responsibility is shared throughout the organization. And so consider that in sort of your incentive plans too, right? So if you've got leaders that are role modeling right behaviors, then they should get compensated. I mean, they should get rewarded for that, right? If they are demonstrating those behaviors, vice versa, the opposite. If you've got certain role models or certain behaviors that are not role modeling those behaviors, right? Like think about how that's going to impact the environment. Because when you look at any of the situations that come out where you hear about some big name CEO or C-suite person that was engaging in all these behaviors just recently, right? Like it's just every day you hear about something. This behavior has gone on for a really, really long time and almost everybody knows about it. And yet it continues to happen, right? And then, So I think a responsibility needs to be shared. And I also think you need to be very clear, right? That if these behaviors, and I can walk through the kind of the plan with you, is that if these behaviors, we're not going to tolerate these kinds of behaviors. So there will be accountability, right? So, and then you have to follow through on that. You know, if you say you're going to hold somebody accountable and then you don't, right, then that's...
The whole team sees it. Yeah.
Then the norms are not going to, it's not going to create that trust that you need. Yeah.
Well, let's do that. Let's dive into the framework, Sejal, because that sounds like it's a very practical approach for any of our listeners to kind of jump in and grab and start thinking about tomorrow.
Yeah. So the first part, so I love acronyms, you know, both of my TEDx talks, I create a framework around acronyms. So this is CAP, right? So
yeah,
it stands for Civility Action Plan, right? And so the C, when I say civility, is the first step is really to get clarity, right, on what civility is. And so, you know, you and I were talking about this, that, you know, one of the reasons why I focused in on civility is because civility, the word itself, could mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people, right? And so for organizations, that's the first step, is let's get really clear on how we as an organization define what civility is, right? And because every organization has to also decide their core values, right? And so I'm out there advocating for organizations to make civility one of their core values, right? And so just like you would with any of your core values, you want to define that, you know, and what that means for your organization. And so, you know, there's a lot of different definitions out there about what civility is. I'll just share one with you that I use in my workshops that really resonated with me. But it was a definition by a doctor, Dr. Cynthia Clark. And the way that she defines civility, I like the way she defines it because she breaks it down into different elements. And as a lawyer, I love things broken down into the basic, you know, elements that everybody can follow. But she said that civility is, it encompasses several different things, right? The first thing is that respect. You know, in order for you to have civility, you have to, the parties have to have an authentic respect for each other, you know? So we may not necessarily be the biggest fans of each other, or there may be things that you and I don't like about each other, but there has to be that underlying authentic respect for each other, right? Like, we're both human beings. We deserve the same dignity and respect. So that has to be the first step. But then there's a really intentional, proactive aspect to it, you know, that in those situations where you don't see eye to eye with this person that you have an authentic respect for, right, where you don't see eye to eye, that you have to make time. Right. Mm. You have to make time. You have to be present with that person and have genuine discourse, have a dialogue about the situation. Right. And so if you think about like our culture, it's the hustle culture. Go, 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 go. This is telling you to do the exact opposite, because if you don't stop and address the situation, it's not going away. It's going to continue to fester, and then the blow up will happen 6 months from now. Probably has nothing to do with what started the whole thing, right? So, So it's, you have to make it right away. You have to be there and be present and make time to address it. And it's not about like who wins or loses, because you're on the same team, right? The dialogue is really about having, coming to that, finding that common ground, right? Of here are our core values. Here's our mission. Right. So we're going to have to compromise. And how can we both get to a solution that we can both live with and keep going towards that mission? Right. And so it's very intentional. And so that's the first step. I'll just stop there and see if you have any follow ups on that. But yeah, that's
I like it. I think that making time to be present and the authentic respect, it's, I can see why civility is struggling, because a lot of people now, like, they're overdoing work. They've got too many tools. We're often virtual with people, so we don't have that connection. We don't have that sort of miles in the bank. And once those microaggressions or tensions start showing up, I see in so many teams, people just start hiding from each other. They hide from the tough conversation. They find ways to work around and get what they need from that department, from someone they like. And so we're not really making that time and space. I think that's a really brilliant call to action.
Yeah, no. And that's what happens. That's what we saw over and over again in some of the cases I worked on, where it's like, had these two individuals made the time to connect and have a conversation about this, we would not be in this lawsuit. Like, it was that clear, right? But you're right. But then you don't have the conversation, and then it just festers. And so now it's not only impacting you, right, and that person's relationship, but now it's impacting your team. Because, and not to mention that you're spending all this time now worrying about, like, am I going to have to interact with this person? Are they going to try to steal my work? Or are they trying to sabotage my job? And so now you're spending all of this mental energy that you could be on going towards the mission and doing what you really want to do, be the best version of you, right? But now you're spending all of that, giving that the negative space in your head, when if you knew how to handle that situation, or we created the environment right, where you could have that conversation, then think about how much more productive we could be, how much more we could do together, et cetera.
Oh, yeah.
Right. It's just, yeah. I just felt like, you know, it was really frustrating because I was doing a lot of the anti-harassment training work as, mm-hmm. as a natural sort of, when I started my business, I started doing that initially. And I would get so frustrated because I was like, they're talking about the illegal behaviors and those things happen the least in organizations. Yes. Do they happen? But yeah, they don't happen as frequently. Whereas like there's all this other stuff. I'm like, but you're not teaching people how to do all this other stuff, right? So yeah.
It's interesting, Sejo, because that reminds me of what the safety industry was in the 90s, which was in a lot of hazardous process industry environments, mining, oil and gas, you would focus on the big problems, like mm-hmm. what might cause someone to lose a life or lose a limb. And we weren't focusing on the small safety transgressions. And actually, we've seen safety culture improve out of sight since we started saying, hey, the standard you walk past is the standard you accept. And, you know, everyone's responsible for keeping an eye out and making observations about safety moments. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you're bringing an approach through the civility action plan, which is a tried and tested approach to driving safety and quality and other key, functions in a business.
Exactly. It's the same sort of framework. I would say exactly yeah. the same approach. Yep. And they do, right? Civility, when I'm talking about civility, it is about safety, right? So part of, as we go through the rest of the framework, right, it is yeah. that you want to create that environment, right? So the C is for clarity. And then the next step is for alignment. The A is for alignment, right? So here you can have the best definition, but if people don't know what it is and what behaviors are okay and what behaviors are not okay, and you have to get very specific.
Yes.
Right? And that's where people get uncomfortable, right? That's where people get uncomfortable because they're like, well, we don't want to micromanage or we don't want to tell people, you know, how what they should and shouldn't do. And I'm like, no, you actually have to do that. Like there's no other way around it. Because you can't expect people to have a shared understanding of what is okay, what's not okay until you tell them, you know, and you show them. And so the alignment becomes really important because it's not just your policies and processes, right? Like it's of course, you want to make sure you broaden your policies and practices and capture civility, not just your illegal behavior. So again, I think for HR that's listening, it's, you know, make sure you review your existing policies, right? To say, are these just limited to the unlawful behaviors or you want to broaden it to civility standards, right? Same thing with your complaint process, right? You want to make sure you have a transparent complaint process for things like microaggressions, right? Uh-huh. And some of the things where like there might be behavior that's happening that you're not necessarily trying to get this person in trouble or looking for some kind of disciplinary action. You just need guidance on something, right? And so you don't want, like, sometimes you get caught in that trap of, like, do I have to investigate everything that comes through the door? No, you don't have to investigate everything that comes through the door, right? But you do want to have a complaint process that captures everything, right? And so I think sometimes we're like, well, if we put it all out there, then we're going to get a lot of complaints. And I'm like, no, you'd rather know what's going on than not know about it. Because if you don't know about it, then you can't do anything. Right. And then you want to make sure that you provide clear guidelines on the steps people take when they're encountering incivility and also give them like shared language. Right. And so so when you start hearing somebody like call in. Right. So that's something that I use in my workshops or at. So when you hear two people saying, hey, you know, I'm going to call you in, you know, or I want to have a call in with you. It's not like I'm coming after you, you know, and you have to protect yourself. It's more like, oh, OK, yeah, she's going to let me know something that's going to help me. Right.
Yes.
So getting that alignment becomes really important. And then the last step is the promotion piece, which is really important where, you know, once you're aligned, you have to take action, right? And so some of the things that you want to do in there is like, obviously, you want to have a holistic approach to your training, right? So a lot of this is going to boil down to fostering that culture of learning, of continuous learning, and making sure you have, there are certain topics that you just have to teach people on how to handle themselves. You know, we talked about this earlier, effective communication or how to... Yeah. Conflict resolution. That's another one where people don't know how to resolve conflict. right? Unconscious bias, that has to be a part of your training. People need to understand what it is so that they can try to figure out what their own bias is so that they don't engage in these microaggressions, right? So there's a lot of how do bystanders intervene, you know? So I think there's some definite areas that civility that are related to civility concepts that you want to make sure that you're regularly bringing to your teams and making sure that this isn't just like, it's not a one-time workshop, you know?
Yeah.
It's an ongoing.
It's living.
That's why I call it a plan, right? It's your civility action plan. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really neat. And so as you think about that clarity, that alignment, that promotion, companies that are using your framework, you know, documenting behaviors, having awards for certain things, how does that sort of translate into artifacts, rhythms, meetings that are going to happen in the organization?
Yeah. So, you know, it's what when I counsel organizations, right, like on how you're going to implement this, the CAP, right? I tell them that these are the steps you want to follow, right? But there are some times where a team will be like, can you work with us in helping us define civility, right?
Right.
I had an organization reach out to me the other day is that they really want to put some robust psychological safety strategies in place, right? So I'll work with them in saying, okay, let's start with the basics. How do you even define psychological safety as an organization, right? And and helping them get these process, you know, and then really there are so many tools available now too, right, that you can incorporate into this to help automate some of this stuff so that like learning and development, right? You have to really look at, it's not a one size fits all solution. So you really have to look at, for an organization, how is CAP going to be tailored and customized for that organization, right? So you have to have certain elements. But like, so for example, three of the core pillars. So civility action plan we talked about, but then I always talk to organizations about when you have your CAP and you've kind of figured out what the definition of civility is, what those behaviors are. Now there's three core pillars we need you to work on, right? First one is, a lot of times we've seen companies take on this, you have a complaint or you have a problem, go talk to somebody about it, like escalate the issue, right?
Yeah.
Take it up to your supervisor, take it up to your HR, take it up to somebody, right? And we want to change that. We want to do the opposite. We want to encourage employees to try to resolve their issues on their own collaboratively, right? Because again, we want that shared responsibility. So if you and I are having an issue together, we want to know it's okay and encouraged that we can work this out together. Now, leadership in HR's role in these situations is to provide collaborative support, right? And make sure that there's understanding and there's tools, if there might be some training or some coaching or some guidance, but really to develop those processes and the tools to make it easier for employees to address these issues on their own.
That's neat. It's interesting as I think about that sort of resolving collaboratively. It applies in all forms of teamwork too, not just at work, teamwork in a community organization that's running youth sports, the PTA at school, you name it. I think people have tended to, there was a guest we had on the show some time back called Eric Coriel, and he talked about how it's human nature to pair, to go off and talk negatively about a team member or a leader that you're having a problem with. And actually that only creates more tensions, but by saying, let's stop hiding from this, let's go and collaborate and try and resolve the matter right now. It's going to actually restore a lot of energy to teams, I can only imagine.
Absolutely, 100%. And it goes back to the what we were just talking about is that psychological safety, right? It's people need to feel comfortable and safe to be able to voice their concerns, or even if they've got like a new idea, right? And so I did a lot of research and I looked at like a lot of different definitions out there of what is psychological safety. And there's tons of them out there. And, you know, again, that's why I think it's important for organizations, just like you do with civility, what do we mean by psychological safety, right? And so the one that I like and that I use a lot with some of my clients that I'm working with is the one by Center for Creative Leadership. And I wrote it down here. I can share it with you. what they say is like the psychological safety at work doesn't mean that everybody is nice to each other all the time.
Yeah.
Right? It means that people feel free to brainstorm out loud, to voice half-finished thoughts, to share feedback, challenge the status quo.
Yeah.
Openly challenge and work through disagreements together, knowing that the organization and the leaders value honesty, candor, truth-telling, and that the team members have each other's backs. So that's the kind of environment where people are not going to be afraid to say, hey, you know, I know you didn't mean anything by that joke, but here's how it might have been. It might have been received, right? And at Nobody Studios, we do this all the time, right? Like, we've defined psychological safety. I'm putting together their psychological safety strategies. And so regularly, one of us says something in the meeting that might have been perceived a different way. We'll have another member of the team member like reach out to us on Slack or on WhatsApp and say, hey, I know you didn't mean this, but here's, and it's sometimes you're like, wow, that's so cool, that because you don't see how it might be perceived, right? But everybody else can pick up on it, right? And so to have that confidence that this person has my back and they're going to come let me know so that I can correct my behavior so it doesn't cause more harm, right? And that's really the thing to keep in mind is that, you know, you can have all of this stuff defined, but if you don't have those systems of accountability, right, and support, because it's not just one person's job to be the police of, is there civility in the organization? This is, everybody needs to be a part of it, right? And so it's really about empowering people. It's not about controlling people.
Yeah.
It's about empowering them with these things so that they can do their part. And as an organization, we can grow together.
Yeah, it's neat. Yeah, I love that CCL, psych safety description, definition. That's probably the best definition I've ever heard. So thanks for sharing that. We'll make sure that we put that in the show notes. It reminds me, a good friend now and former podcast guest, Dr. Andre Martin, he actually did some of his early career work there and went on to work in other large organizations. But one of the sound bites that he had when we talked was that the role of the leader is to import stress from the team and export civility. So he was there using your word too. And I love the way that you've framed it as it's all of our jobs, because it really is. You don't have to have a fancy meeting structure or a huge amount of training, just some common language, common framework, and everyone can lift the bar, you know, for the collective.
Good. You have to get very specific. I cannot stress that enough. Like, I remember like one of the clients I was working with, and I had presented at one of their team meetings. And then, you know, one of the senior leadership members said to me, you know, or didn't say to me, but said it kind of like out loud, sounds like we're telling people how to behave at work. And I'm like, exactly what you're doing. Exactly what you're doing. Because unless you're okay with people being jerks to each other and engaging in behaviors that are harming the people in your organization, if you're okay with that, so be it. And there are some professions, you know, I post about this on LinkedIn all the time, and there are some people that will say, well, I don't mind being in those kind of environments, like high pressure environments. There are some people that thrive in those kind of environments. They like being in those kind of environments.
Yeah.
All the power to them, right? But I'm talking to the environments that are not willing to tolerate those behaviors, right? So I tell those people that I'm not the right person for you. You know, then you don't talk, you know, that's okay. But I'm talking to what the statistics show is what's harming so many people in the workplace. And I'm talking to the majority of people that are going to sit here and say, I'm not going to tolerate being treated that way. You know, like I'm not willing to put up with that behavior. And after the pandemic, after the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, after the politics and all the craziness that's going on in the world, the wars, I mean, people's tolerance levels for incivility has gone down significantly, you know, and I've been saying this for 7 years at least, you know, but.
And it's only getting worse.
I know.
Yeah.
People don't want to waste their time and energy in relationships or workplaces where they're not feeling good about being there. You know, we don't want to be in that negative space. Like we want to be in our happy space. And if I'm coming out of work and I'm thinking about a coworker and I've got negative feelings about, I got to address that situation. Otherwise it's only causing me harm and people that I love. Right. And so,
I agree with that. And some of your statistics I saw on one of your posts, you said, that incivility in the workplace can reduce effort of the team by 48%. Mm-hmm. That's a massive impact on effort. Yes. And I think by inference, it said quality of work drops by 38%. So we're not talking about, you know, go and do all of this work to get a small lift. Like, this is fundamental, transformative change.
Yeah. And we're not even just talking about if the statistics are also like alarming when you think about, even if it's not happening to you, but you're observing it happen to somebody else and how that impacts your work behavior. I mean, that makes sense, right? But again, and the thing is, everybody's aware of these behaviors that are happening, but nobody's doing anything about it. And that's what causes the additional harm. Because if I'm being harassed at work and my coworkers aren't stepping in and they aren't doing it and they see it happening, how much longer do you think I'm going to work there? You know, I mean, not long, right? And so I always get this comment that somebody always asks, you know, like, well, some people are just way too sensitive. Right. And my response to that is maybe, right? But maybe there's good reason for it, because we've allowed uncivil behaviors in our workplaces and it's getting worse. It's not getting better. The numbers are saying, again, there's so many, if you look at the SHRM website, because they launched this initiative. Now, when I started talking about civility in 2017, when I started my business, there weren't too many people using that word civility about talking about bringing civility to work. I mean, that's why I called myself. I picked that title because I'm like, nobody else has it on LinkedIn. It's mine. I claimed it. It's my title. Right. But they have all kinds of statistics on their website about the numbers of people. 90% of people are saying that they're dealing with incivility, or they've dealt with incivility in their workplaces. And people think that, you know, I do want to make this point, is that people are saying that, oh, well, now that we're not working face-to-face, that now we're working remotely, you know, that incivility is going to go down. And I'm like, wrong. Think again. It's only going to go way up. It's gone up tenfold. Cyberbullying has gone up like tenfold. Right, since we've been doing remote work. So these numbers are not going down, they're going up. And what we've done hasn't worked, right? And so I think it's really important for everybody to do their part and really, really bring civility into their own interactions with each other, but then start empowering people, you know, in your lives to do the same. Yeah.
I've always wondered, particularly now with all the hybrid remote work and all of the Slack channels, Teams channels, emails, I've always wondered why AI is not being deployed to be sort of like the civility coach. Hey, Dane,
I know.
Don't send that message. Or I just noticed that you sent these three messages to Sejal and they're very different from the tone in your messages over here to Bob.
I'm all over that. I'm all over you that are. Already. I've already put that out there at Nobody Studios and I'm like, let's go. This is exactly what we need, right? But again, it's You can minimize a lot of it. You can, you know, because even if you just use ChatGPT, like if you have a quick message you want to send somebody, cut and paste that into ChatGPT and say, how might this be perceived? It'll tell you. It'll tell you. It'll say, how can I make this better? And it'll improve it for you, right? And you could see the differences. And just one might be just typing really quickly, and I don't have a lot of time, so I'm writing quickly to let you know that I'm dealing with, you know, how what happened with us, right? I'm dealing with it.
Yeah.
So my intention was to just notify people real quickly, but some people might have been perceiving that as, oh, she doesn't care about the relationship, right? If I didn't use it properly. So absolutely, I think it's a great idea. And it could, especially when you're dealing with people of different cultures too.
Yeah.
Right?
Different
cultures and different communication styles. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And I actually get that feedback myself, is that I'm very personable. I enjoy conversations when I'm, you know, on a video or in an in-person meeting, but I hate emails. So when I'm on an email, I'm just like, I'm just going to give you the shortest, sharpest, like, yes, no, why are we doing that? Can I have this? And so people find it grating to see his real life Dane and his email response Dane. Yeah.
I'm the same way. I'm the same way too. I don't like emails.
There's some work to do. No, not at all. Well, this has been a really cool conversation. It's really piqued my interest, Sejal, for where I can be working even with my own teams to drive this whole civility action plan. There were some really cool takeaways. The number one being that this is a growing trend, which is very disturbing, and that it's a trend that can be solved at all levels of an organization. It's not just the leader's job, but, you know, create a culture of it. I thought it was really cool the way that you touched on the fact that people are starting to feel alone or isolated, which is driving that. So creating a bit more shared vision, alignment, even at a cultural level helps here. And the deep dive on microaggressions was really powerful. Probably the highlight for me was this intentional use of the language of calling them in. And really putting that into action. I think that's a huge gift. So thank you for sharing that. And then I think in this latter part of the conversation, just thinking about the definitions and being clear and actually stating what is required of the team. I think we've come through an era where people have said, well, no one wants to be micromanaged. And I think a lot of people have stepped a bit too far back from how they set the conditions for success in cultures. And I really like what I'm hearing from you in terms of, well, let's be very clear in what we expect. Let's make civility a core value and set out the behaviors very clearly. It's a great call to action for all teams.
Yes, you captured it really, really well. Thank you.
Well, you hit all the key points. I just replayed your key points. if any of our guests want to come and find you at Train Extra or at Nobody Studios, where do they best find you?
Yeah, thank you again for inviting me. I really enjoyed our conversation. I'm on LinkedIn, so if you're on LinkedIn, shoot me a connection request there. You can send me an email through my Train Extra website. It's Sejal, my first name, at trainextra.com. So reach out to me. Awesome. You know, and again, follow me on, if at the topics that I talked about today resonate, follow me on LinkedIn, because I go out of my way to find resources on these topics. And I'm always sharing like checklists and information and podcasts and things like that that are really helpful, because I think we need a lot more people to get involved in what I call the civility revolution, right? We need a lot more people to get involved and do what they can. I like to say, like, I'm trying to work myself out of a job, right? Like, I want to make sure we're all part of this together. So that those would be the best ways to get a hold of me.
I love it. And 35,439 followers. You're already doing a great job of spreading the civility revolution.
Doing my best.
All right. This has been wonderful, Sejal. I look forward to keeping in touch and doing some more of this work together.
Awesome. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,